Welcome, fellow seekers. My name is Nathan, and this is the Law of One and Spiritual Concepts podcast, where I share my interpretations of the Law of One and other related topics. Today, I'm excited to share with you another interview I did with my good friend Chris. One quick note before we get into it. If anyone's interested, both Chris and I will be attending the Law of One Contemplative Retreat in Crestone, Colorado, this May of 2025. I'll include a link in the show notes below if anyone's interested in signing up. We'd love to see you there. Without further ado, let's get into it. Today, it is my pleasure to welcome Chris back to the show. Welcome, Chris. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Nathan. Doing great. Really happy to be back with you.
Yeah, I'm excited. Today, we're going to be talking about intuition here. So, got a hopefully a good lineup for everybody, and hope you all enjoy it. So, from the beginning, Ra says the function of intuition is to inform intelligence. What does that mean to you, and what do you consider intuition to be?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. One of the ways that Quo described it as intuition provides the food for thought, which I think is interesting. So it's almost like, and it's, you know, essentially something that comes from our unconscious, our deep mind, up through the veil and into our conscious mind. We may not kind of know where it comes from or understand what we're receiving, but it's, I think, a way that we have access to information from a variety of sources that, you know, exist outside of or before our conscious awareness or perception of the world around us.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And to build on what you're saying, Rod talks about, and I've talked about it previously too, with the idea of this roots of mind. So you have of the tree here, basically. So your conscious mind is the upper branches of the tree. The lower trunk is the intuition. And the roots into the ground then is the deep mind or the unconscious mind, where there's many different levels and layers to that. But the intuition is basically that in-between serving factor from pulling from the unconscious up to the conscious mind. So it's that route in between we're pulling from. So I considered it as well, too, when you're listening to your intuition, where do you think those thoughts are coming from, or who might be speaking to you in that sense as well? And I guess I've always looked at that more as like the higher self or other sort of our inner guides, some of those people coming within from our unconscious mind to get us some sort of information, maybe through synchronicities, through gut feelings or other actions like that, that I've considered to be intuition.
I think that's absolutely correct. And, you know, to the extent Ra kind of talks about the idea that we are the entire universe in holographic form, and that like our deep mind and the spirit complex are almost like an open-ended funnel for everything in the universe. I think the potential source is limitless in terms of where your inspiration's arising from, but I think the most likely sources are going to be your higher self or your guides that are helping to kind of feed you information, which Ra talks a lot about. But it seems like, you know, our challenge is to become aware of it, I guess, and to maybe learn to trust it. But I also think that one of the things that Ra talks about is the idea that most catalyst, which is like anything that we encounter or get exposed to, is already kind of processed on a subconscious level before we even become consciously aware of it. So I think there is the idea that you may be processing even data that you're taking in from your environment that you're not even aware of, that could also be playing into, you know, feeding into the conscious mind in the form of a hunch or a feeling. You don't know why, you know, you don't know why maybe you don't like somebody or a place doesn't feel right, something feels off. But I think that, you know, it can come from guardians, guides, other sources. But I think it's also the subconscious. We are aware of a lot of things going around in our immediate environment on a subconscious level that we're not even aware of.
Yeah. It's like the whole analogy of the iceberg. You know, the tip of the iceberg is all you see as your conscious mind, but there's so much more going on below the surface there that can be processing. So much of this catalyst, as you described, is being processed unconsciously before little bits of pieces end up trickling to your conscious mind that you then are processing, where there's so much more, yeah, going on behind the scenes. So that kind of takes us to then the idea here of this rational mind versus the intuitive mind. Ra has a quote on this in 94.4, where they basically describe as well later that the intuitive rational mind can either be the great handicap or the great virtue. And this is interesting to me because it seems like it's kind of based on how you use it, how you balance the both of those, that dictates whether it's a virtue or whether it's a handicap. And so the intuitive mind we've kind of discussed a little bit already, but the rational, I consider that more of our ability to think, to reason, to make, come to decisions, structure concepts, I guess, in that sense. So what is your take, I guess, on this clash between the intuitive versus the rational mind here?
I think you're exactly right. And, you know, there's one channel where Quo describes these two features, the rational intuitive portions of our mind. Without both of them, it's almost like trying to stand on one leg, that we need them both to progress because they serve somewhat different functions. I think, you know, when Ra talks about, you know, this kind of two aspects of our mind as being at once the great handicap and great virtue, I think what they're saying is that in contrast to like a tree, we are not self-sufficient, that we are forced to work with others. So we're handicapped in that sense, that we're forced to interact with each other in terms of learning and survival. But that interacting starts us on the lessons of love. So I feel like in a handicapped sense, we're forced to kind of work with each other for maybe at first survival and then learning and flourishing. But I feel like it's that coming together for a survival purpose that brings us into the first stages of learning what love is by dealing with each other, and the mirror effect of dealing with others that help reveal our blockages and our self to ourself in terms of how we react and how we perceive others, how we project our shadow onto others.
Exactly. And then combining both those minds together to see, I had this interaction here that triggered me or left me feeling hurt or whatever, but then looking back on it and analyzing it with the rational mind to see, but as you're doing that, kind of allow that intuitive insight to flow in to realize, well, maybe this was a blockage I had, or I felt the same way. Now this is happening to me to show me that I need to open my heart, or potentially whatever the issue is or blockage can be. You have to use both of these different mind states to really analyze and to grasp the lessons of the catalyst, I think, to really get it in deep.
It's really, really well said. And, you know, Rob mentions that, like, for the mind that's overly intuitive, it's so vague that you don't make a lot of progress. You know, if you're overly analytical, it's so ordered that, you know, you're a little too closed off to things. And it's like this blending of the two that is an element of like creativity, receptiveness, but then structured by the analytical rational mind in a way that makes it usable. So we need to like give it a structure. We need to figure out what's useful, what isn't useful. So I like Quo's metaphor about, you know, intuition gives us the food for thought, but we still have to kind of chew it up and swallow it with the analytical mind for it to be useful for us in our polarization.
Yeah, oh, that's perfect. The simple example I was trying to think of too was like, I'm getting in my car to go to work. I need my rational mind to stop at the stoplights, to avoid other cars, to be conscientious on the road. But I can use my intuitive mind when I get a thought in my head saying, maybe I should take a different route, or maybe I should show up a little bit later or something. You get this feeling in there that you can't necessarily describe, but then come to find out there was a bad accident on this side of the road, or God forbid something terrible happens there, but your intuition is coming in. If you choose to actually listen to it and follow it, that can help guide you and maybe direct you on other paths. So I think maybe a lot of people can relate to that as well too, that we all have these moments where you don't really know why you're receiving what you're receiving, but if you tend to follow it, it can help or grow from it at least.
Well said. And I feel like there's a lot of examples. There's a lot of even jobs like detectives, certain law enforcement people, they learn to trust their gut, as they say, you know, over time, you know, follow their hunch. They get like a feeling about a person or an event, feels wrong, feels off, or, you know, I think the more you're used to dealing in that environment, the more you kind of pay attention to that feeling, that that gut response. And I've heard other examples of people like apartment hunting that just got a really bad vibe about the property they were looking at, like something felt really wrong. And then maybe later they found out that there had been a murder or some other, you know, heinous act that took place there. But like, I feel like it's a benefit to being a bit more intuitive. And in fact, we even call psychics now are often called intuitives. They it means they're open, they're receptive to variety of input that goes beyond just what they immediately see and feel, you know?
Yep, exactly. And it's a skill. So we'll dig into that a little bit more. I think the part here then too is just to re-highlight that it seemed the balance of the two is needed in order to progress spiritually within a comfortable direction. It seems like going off to one distance too far has a tendencies to almost drag you down or take you in the wrong direction, I guess.
And I feel like so much of us are one way or the other in our world, where we're kind of the philosophical materialists. We tend to put overemphasis on just what we can see and observe and maybe discount the feeling, intuitive aspects of it. You know, we might, because we don't trust that voice we might hear, we might discount it. Oh, I'm being silly. Oh, why am I reacting this way? But I feel like so much of that over time, you know, you learn to maybe trust and accept that more. And then you learn to not just accept it for whatever it's telling you, but to exercise some discernment,
yeah,
you know, to like kind of apply your analytical framework. Like, well, where's this coming from? Mm-hmm. Is this coming from a bias I have, a past trauma, a preconception, a religious belief? Where is this feeling coming from? And should I credit it? Should I listen to it? Or am I, you know, is it not necessarily serving me?
Right. Yeah. To be able actually to analyze it and to think more from there. And we've touched on discernment, I know, a few times. So that's always an important part.
You know, another example that comes to mind of things I've listened to where it's like a sudden knowing. You hear this a lot in like ET experiencers, people that have had relationships, whether they were abducted or what have you. And also, you also hear it with NDEs, what people call downloads, mm-hmm. where they feel like they were given like a huge kind of bundle of information on about something, usually a spiritual topic, that they have to then, they don't know really where it came from, but they have to slowly kind of unbundle it and unpackage it and verbalize it, you know, in time, which is also how some of the channelings are viewed. It's like you get a bundle of concepts all at once, and then you have to apply the rational mind to kind of unwrap it and structure it and verbalize it in a helpful way.
Yeah, that's a great example. And that makes a lot of sense too, with being able to actually work with that intuitive aspect, which can be so, I don't know, metaphysical or not easy to grasp, I guess, from our left brain conscious thinking, you know, side of us.
It's very true. You know, I also hear it in, you know, Bigfoot experiencers, Sasquatch experiencers. They often get like a very overwhelming fear of like, or feeling of fear or dread, even though they haven't like seen anything yet, or this feeling like I need to leave. They don't quite understand where it's coming from. And, you know, there's hundreds of people that have experienced this. So there's some discussion among those communities that it may be a function of infrasound. Large animals are able to project like subsonic vibrations that can make us feel sick, can make us, you know, forgetful, or, you know, produce like a feeling of dread. Tigers, elephants can do this. Some of them communicate through that. But it's another thing where I've heard it quite a lot, where, you know, someone will be out in the woods and then for no apparent reason, they'll just get this feeling like we have to go now. Yeah. And they are usually smart enough to listen and leave.
Because it's almost like an association of fear with it too, it seems like, where
yes.
it almost makes you take it a little more seriously from that point.
It's so true. And I, you know, my wife and I experienced something a little bit like that when we were snorkeling down in Maui some years ago, where we were off the west coast of Maui, like Ka'anapali, and we kind of started getting out in the water a little bit. you know, we were maybe 30 feet deep of water, and there was all these sea turtles. We were having such a great time, but the water was kind of murky with a lot of turtles swimming around. And at the same moment, after being out there for a while, we both kind of came up, looked at each other, and like, we need to go. We need to get out of the water. I don't know where that came from. I don't know, you know, is it possible there was a 15-foot tiger shark, you know, coming down the coast? Maybe. But it was weird that we both had the same feeling or intuition that was incredibly strong. And we both just, yep. And we both just immediately swam in, got out of the water. And, you know, we still talk about it because it's rare that you have such an overwhelming feeling. And I don't know where it came from. I don't know if it was just we realized that it's not smart to swim in murky water, that you can't see what else is in there. But it was a weird thing that we both had that together. Well, it was a really powerful feeling, like, no, we need to go. We shouldn't be here.
That's a perfect example right there. It seems like it as well, where you can't really explain it, but it just comes to you in that sense. So I think you're definitely receiving some guidance at that point. A good thing for it.
Yeah, not good.
So building off that then a little bit, I guess, how else do you know when it's your intuition versus your thinking mind? We've kind of gone around in a few circles with some of this, I think, but I guess, at least from my point, when I tend to think of the thinking mind, it tends to be the aspect of you that either overthinks things or just keeps wrapping around in circles and circles. Like, that keeps you up at night thinking about different issues that have come up, where the intuitive is more of where you can't really explain necessarily where it's coming from, but it's just more of a feeling, or a feeling you know it's right. So do you have any discerning factors, I guess, you'd see between the two to differentiate?
You know, I've listened to some things that talk about how, like, the vast majority of our conscious thinking, we're not really thinking thoughts per se. We're kind of replaying the past or worrying about the future. And, like, one of the things is, you know, your emotional content of your thinking, is it fear-based? And I feel like so much of what the average person spends their mental energy on is either replaying past regrets or scenarios that they're upset about, or they wish they could have done better, or, you know, feeling stress or anxiety about the future, uncertainty. So I feel like both of those have a negative emotional content associated with them, that is usually a good sign that you're just falling victim to your cycles of fear. You know, you're diminishing yourself vibrationally by falling into thought spirals, like we talked about before, that you can choose to just ignore and refocus from. So I think that's one way to do that.
I think that's perfect. I think fear is the one thing I was kind of tying back to as well quite a bit, to realize when you're in the thinking mind, when it keeps coming back to that fearful sense. So I think that was perfectly said, at least from my experiences as well.
And I feel like another thing that's pretty common is people have a distrust, you know, of not just others, but of themselves. You know, it's the old once bitten, twice shy. People are hesitant to trust others. So I feel like another common, you know, distortion maybe to our thinking is, you know, you could call it a little bit of stranger danger. Like, is this a bias that I've had from bad negative experiences that are causing me to distrust this, what I'm hearing from this person or what I'm experiencing? That's another thing that's possible. And I feel like, you know, it's a way to kind of check, just, you know, explore these thoughts to make sure there isn't something else going on. But I think we also are kind of, we learn over time to distrust ourselves, you know, oh, I'm just being silly. Why, you know, I'm just, you know, I feel like because we don't listen to and nurture our intuition, we are very quick to discount it a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because when I was trying to come up with an idea for my intuition, it was more of a loving, unconditionally loving parental figure who's there to help you and to guide you from that sense, if you actually choose to listen to them or if you follow through with it. But like you said, your rational mind almost kicks in, and it's so easy to kind of discount that from a certain extent.
I think that's a perfect segue, because I kind of think of these, because the intuitive mind is inherently kind of creative, it's a little bit like the, you know, the playful child, and it can be fearful or drowned out by the critical parent voice that is the rational mind. So I feel like folks that are overly rational or overly analytical can crowd out through discounting or criticizing their intuitive faculties in a way that kind of causes them to maybe wither or become underutilized. And I feel like part of the balance that Ra is getting at is that you learn to trust and you listen to the, you know, the playful child voice. You listen to that intuitive voice. It's okay to use discernment, to structure it, to analyze it. But I don't think we want to come, you know, give both barrels of the analytical voice to drown out that creative voice within us, you know, that needs to be nurtured, I think, and fostered over time.
Exactly. So continuing on that point then, let's get into, I guess, how do you see being able to learn to listen to your intuition more and more? Because I've mentioned it previously as well before too, in the society we're in these days, we're in this information overload from media, from communications, from work, whatever. We're constantly plugged in where you're bombarded with stuff day in, day out. And that seems to be a big stopping point to the intuition, unless it's really, really loud in your head. So I think part of it is just kind of getting quieted down. So whether through meditation, some of those other practices, just opening yourself up to that, to acknowledge that you're listening to the intuition is a huge starting point.
I couldn't agree more. I think that cultivating like silence, doing silent meditation, creating space for that voice instead of drowning it out is you know, such an important aspect of this. I feel like now more than ever, we're being bombarded by screens, by headphones, by music. And I myself, like before I kind of found the path later in life, I was always blaring music. I felt like it was kind of trying to distract myself from my inner dialogue. And I see this around so much now, people that have loud stereos or headphones, which is all good, you know, all good things in all good time if people need distraction. But for me, once I started meditating and centering myself, I lost any need for that. I when I drive now, I'm in the moment. I don't play music. I feel like there's enough things competing for our attention now that we drown out that, you know, the still quiet voice, as they've sometimes described it. So I think you're right. The most important thing we can do is to begin to center ourselves through silence in a very practical sense. And I feel like it's a practice, you know, the meditation is a practice. And even just sitting in contemplation or quietly without the TV on, without the music blaring, you begin to kind of enjoy that feeling of centeredness, of presence, that you start craving it. Like, I don't want to be just bombarded with sensory input all the time. I like just being present. And I feel like it's something that once you get a little taste of that, you really want more, you want to cultivate it.
That can be powerful. And that's for sure. The other part within that silence then too, is you can ask your unconscious mind, your higher self, for guidance. If you're trying to make like this life decision or whatever it is, or just need help with certain things, you can mentally ask that side of you for a response and wait and see. It might not be right away. It might be received in a different way than you'd think. Maybe somebody you meet down the street tells you something that you needed to hear. You never know. But you taking that time to put out that intent, I think, is really important to at least activate that intuition that's to follow. But again, it's just important that you're not always responded to right away immediately. It's something you got to remain open to look for the signs.
That's a great suggestion. And, you know, that's something that I do is, you know, in my evening, you know, prayer and gratitude before bed is try to set my intention to establish a relationship with my subconscious, my higher self, my guides, so that we can kind of communicate through the medium of dreams, which is another source of inspiration we haven't talked much about. I think that's super important. Part of that's setting the intention and also asking for guidance. I know another thing that they recommend frequently is if you have a major decision and you're really struggling about how to move forward, visualize picking one choice in your mind and sit with that for a day as though that is your decision, and then see what kind of intuition you get around that. And then the next day, visualize picking the other decision, and then just be open to whatever intuitions you're getting about the correctness of that alternative. And then usually if you spend a day in either camp, you'll come away with like, which do you feel more strongly about on a deeper level?
That's beautiful. It's funny, that ties in a lot with one of the examples I tend to use at times too. It's a simplified version of that, I guess I'd say, but it's with, say, coming down to like a yes or no or a right or left sort of decision there. Say that your left hand is the yes and your right hand is the no. So then walk towards that left hand initially, that decision, see how it feels, then try the other hand and see it from that standpoint. Just you'll kind of intuitively start to feel which one feels more right for you or more natural from that sense. You're trying on the situation to see if you can get that internal guidance one direction or another. And the last part I'll add to that too is keeping an open mind to synchronicities as well, that I think those can also be huge intuitive hits that help you maybe guide you in certain directions or what feels right in the direction you're going in your life path.
Oh, that's a great point. And I like that exercise. I've never heard that visualization exercise, but I think that's a great one. And yeah, that's another thing Rod talks about on the synchronicity side, that like, you know, we're kind of a conscious universe. So like the more we pay attention to those odd coincidences, whether it's a strange, like the hawk appearing for Don and Carla and the raw material, what could it mean? And I feel like, you know, part of that is being receptive to it and not getting too bogged down. You know, I know Don and the raw material got a little bogged down and like, what does this mean? And I think that's a good example of where he tried to approach this synchronicity from an analytical mind. Like, well, if it wouldn't have happened, I would have stayed on this course. And since it did happen, it's a sign that I'm making the wrong decision. And I feel like that wasn't necessarily, if you read between the lines, that wasn't necessarily what this, you know, hawk showing up right outside their window was intended to signify. It sounds like it was really made to like give approval or reassurance. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a good example of where Don tried to take what should be an intuitive process, and instead of paying attention to his feelings, he tried to analyze it because he was, you know, he was a brilliant guy. Yeah. And I feel like he tried to use logic to get to what the meaning was, where it should have been feeling.
Right. I think they even, I won't get into it too much, but I think they describe the archetypes in that sense too, that there is a rational and an intuitive aspect to both of those archetypes. So actually understanding them at that deeper level, as Ross says, the concept complexes. So you have to feel some of that, but you also have to analyze some of it at the same time. So the most efficient way was to understand the archetypes, to try on those different personas to be of service, was to combine both of those understandings together, just like that, as you're describing, it seems like, with the synchronicities for what they saw.
That's a great point. And I think all of us have these strange synchronicities. And I love that one quote from Rob where he's like, think about the wandering path your life has taken and the different things that happen to make you choose one way or the other. I'm paraphrasing poorly at that, but you know, think about this well. And I feel like when we look back on our lives, there's a lot of just twists and turns that were unexpected, and little things might have taken us one way and then the other. And I feel like, just like the intuition, the more we can learn to open to those things and be aware of them, you know, that the more helpful they'll be in navigating our life. I don't know at my age that I really believe in pure coincidence anymore. It's just things are happening in synchronicity on levels that perhaps we don't understand. But yeah. I'm not the older I get, the less I believe in randomness.
Sure seems like it, especially when you analyze some of those situations that came up using our rational mind. You can see, oh, this kind of got me going down this path or this direction here, that there's more behind it, it seems, each time. So it's just the very little minutia of that iceberg we're talking about that you're conscious of. There's just so much going on behind the scenes to direct you and help guide you, and in a positive manner, ideally, with whatever way you're trying to polarize.
That's a great point. And as Ra mentions, like, if you miss one signpost, there'll be another one. It's okay. Like, you know, we're given all the opportunity we need. There's a lot of people in the NDE context that look back on their lives and they realize, oh, you know, I had an opportunity to go down this path here and I kind of missed it. And then later on there was here. And there's a number of people that, you know, the NDE actual experience where they are almost die and go through this is kind of like the final backup to get them on the path that they were meant to be on, or at least they come to see it that way.
That's the 2x4 to the head at that point, yes, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that the more and more that you open up this sense and you listen to it and you acknowledge it, the stronger it'll get. At least, so in my Kriya Yoga lineage, we talk about few different things here. It's following the scriptures, listening to the guru, and doing the practice, the sadhana every day, until you get to that point where you meet that inner guru, where you actually get to learn from through your intuition of guiding you in different directions and how things should actually be done and what's for your greatest good and what's for your best benefit at that point. So until you can clearly hear that voice, you continue through this cycle. And it's really just a beautiful concept of getting you connected with your higher self or with the creator, at least in my eyes there.
That sounds amazing. So much of that is, you know, getting rid of the external distraction and then nurturing that, I think, being more mindful of it, and it will get louder with time.
Exactly.
You know, the one thing we didn't talk about is really the role that intuition has in inspiration, which is a really important kind of idea. And as Ra describes, like, inspiration is this combination of a very strong desire or will to know in a certain area, coupled with the ability to open to intuition in what you receive after that. And I mentioned in one of our earlier discussions about how Quo has described will or desire, if it's strong enough, as essentially creating a almost like a vacuum in our future that draws to us that which we desire, the focus of our will, our desire to know, and whatever that might be, you know, it's something that you have to use judiciously and be mindful of it. But I feel like there are so many examples, you know, Einstein or, you know, fascinating things where people receive this amazing intuition, often in dreams. Yeah. They wake up and, you know, there's a number of really interesting examples of that where, like, one that comes to mind is there was a South African vocal group that had traveled the world called Ladysmith Black Mambazo. They were like a 15-person, like, choral group that sang, like, traditional, like, Zulu / gospel kind of influenced music. And the founder of that band had the idea for it when he had this dream that was like this heavenly choir. He saw like all of these like almost like angels floating above the ground singing in this beautiful harmony. And when he woke up, that gave him this powerful like inspiration to put the band together, you know, and he ended up doing that. They traveled the world. They sang with like Paul Simon and the Graceland album. And it was like this door that just opened for all of them to like international kind of recognition and stardom. But there's so many examples of that. I know even like René Descartes before, who's kind of one of the founders of modern scientific, you know, method, had a dream allegedly on the battlefield of like an angel telling him, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but telling him like the secret to the universe is you get it through like measure and pen or whatever, you know, through observation and measurement. And, you know, anyway, I think it's interesting, this idea of if you're really hungry enough, it will come to you. And as I shared with you before, I kind of feel like that's how I found the raw material, because I had, you know, gone down some very deep rabbit holes of different paranormal features, and some of them left me so hungry for answers that I felt like, you know, I honestly feel like that helped draw to me something that would give me those answers that I had so, you know, strongly wanted.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to those kind of situations too, with that inspiration that you can't explain and starts going down a different path, or you wake up from this dream that has guided you maybe to go in this direction or to try it out. And when you follow through, it's like, oh my gosh, this opened a whole other doorway at this point. So it is really beautiful through all your examples there as well, too, with how that all ends up lining up at the end and how those synchronicities become such a core part of your life if you allow them and listen to them from there. Well, I think we're getting close to the end of this episode here. So any other closing thoughts that you had on intuition before we end up wrapping up?
This has been a really good discussion. I feel like if there's a core takeaway, you know, it's really that you need to balance, you know, intuition with your analytical mind, and that you can help foster your intuitional side through being open to it, accepting it, like learning to trust it, but also exercising your discernment, because it's by definition vague and it requires, you know, you to spend some time with it to understand it and to ultimately make up your mind what you think it means and what aspect of it might be useful to you.
Yeah, perfectly said, I think, there. Because it's one of those concepts to me that seems like it can be incredibly complex or incredibly simple. Just depends on the way you open yourself up to it and the way you end up using it from there. But it can be such a powerful skill to aid you on your spiritual growth and to guide you through your life as well. So that was what I was hoping to get through today with some of this, just on such a cool topic of intuition, and one that's a little more metaphysical, that's not always so easy to throw concepts at, but yeah, hopefully we did the topic justice.
I really appreciate you putting this discussion together and creating a forum, and I thank you for all you do, Nathan, and I always enjoy our discussions.
Oh, of course, Chris, my pleasure, and thanks for coming out today. I really appreciate your input on this as well, and yeah, I love these discussions as well, so thanks again.
My pleasure.
We hope all the listeners enjoyed this episode as well and found it useful. I look forward to seeing you in the next one. I leave you now in the love and in the light.